Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. And welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. There's not a lot going on this week other than the playoffs. I mean, there really wasn't a lot of baseball news generally, or even just sports news generally, that I think we should cover. So there's been a little bit of Mets news. I'll start off with that, you know. So the manager search isn't really going anywhere right now. I wonder why, since it's been revealed that Craig Counsell can't interview until after, I believe, the World Series, November 1st or whatever that ends. So all we've heard is that per Will Salmon of The Athletic, it's likely to be an external candidate, which rules out the chance of Carlos Beltran or Eric Chavez in that scenario, which have been two names that I know Martino floated and a couple other people floated, and, you know, is it really surprising? Although I believe the Post did report that they're not afraid to do a first-time manager, which I guess is nice, but that's if they don't get Craig Counsell. This all seems to be just a big waiting game for Craig Counsell. They asked to interview, I just want to make sure I get his title correct, with the Rangers. He's an associate manager, whatever the hell that is, Will Venable. He's the associate manager of the Texas Rangers. And, I'm so baffled by what that means. Is that just like a bench coach? Is that like a special bench coach? Who knows? Yeah, he's an associate manager. I'm just looking at this list of coaches, and it's confusing. So he turned down the opportunity to interview for the job. Not really surprised. His team is in the ALCS, and the Mets last year won 77 games, or however much that was, 70-something. I'm not surprised that you would turn that down. There's been one name I've heard floated other than Craig Counsell, and that's Mark Budzinski, the Toronto first base coach. I mean, this all feels like one big waiting game, trying to wait out Craig Counsell, right? Like that's how it feels. There's absolutely no movement. They have this, if they wanted someone else, they could go out and, you know, they asked Will Venable for an interview. They've connected Budzinski to this. They could be interviewing people. Why are they waiting? Craig Council. So every day it feels more and more likely that Craig Council is the next manager of the Mets, at least from an outsider's perspective. Yeah, that's really all the news from the manager search. This is such a slow week. There've been some awards given out, finalists announced, so we'll get into that. Francisco Lindor is a Gold Glove finalist. He should win this. Like, looking at this list, he should win this. I also want to go off on a slight tangent. And I want to bring up the list of the finalists too, because I get very mad about this, right? They introduced this utility Gold Glove, right? After years of people complaining, and you had, Buck Showalter talking about it last year in regards to Luis Guillorme. And so they've got this in here, right? And I just want to say that Lindor's up against Dansby Swanson and Ezekiel Tovar. He should win it, right? He had a great offensive season. That's usually why you win a Gold Glove, which is sad but true. I'm not gonna get my hopes up, but like, I want him to win. So they have this utility glove, right? Utility Gold Glove. Mookie Betts, Tommy Edman, and Ha-Seong Kim are nominated for the utility glove, right? And now, from a pure, like, visual standpoint, yeah, that makes sense. Mookie Betts plays right field most of the time, but he's played second base. He played shortstop this year, right? Like, you'd in some capacity more than just like a game or an inning. So that makes sense. Tommy Edman moves all over the diamond. Ha-Seong Kim, he was main shortstop last year, but he played second. He plays third. He plays short. Like, that makes sense. If you're nominated for the utility glove, you shouldn't also be nominated for another award, because Mookie Betts is nominated for right field as well, and Ha-Seong Kim is nominated for second base. If you're nominated for one of those, you should not be allowed to be nominated for utility, because that means that you did spend a majority of your time at that position to get the Gold Glove nomination for that. The award doesn't work if you do it that way. And I believe that the American League has a similar problem, but not the same problem. Mauricio Dubon is nominated at utility, and he's also nominated for second base. Why are we nominating people when they play one position for majority of the time, and they're able, it makes me mad, right? Because this should be an award that does celebrate the Tommy Edmonds of the world, the Luis Guillormes of the world, the Jeff McNeils of the world, although he does play majority second base. But, like, these are guys who do play all over the place and aren't specifically at one position, right? Like, it's stupid. And I love Mookie Betts. I want Tommy Edman to win that Gold Glove for, like, this perceived sanctity of the award that I have. Because Mookie Betts should win it for right field, because he's probably the best right fielder in the game, if not one of them, like him, Corbin Carroll, who else? But, like, this, it makes no sense, and it makes me mad. If you want to nominate Mookie Betts for utility, then don't nominate him. Say, okay, if you qualify for one of these other awards, you don't qualify for utility, right? If you're top three for right field, then you can't, even if you're the number one vote getter for utility as well, you cannot qualify for that. And that's my rant. It makes me upset. All right. Also, we had the all rookie teams come out. Kodai Senga, starting pitcher on the all-rookie first team, and Francisco Alvarez is the catcher on the all-rookie second team. This is not a surprise to me, you know? That makes sense. There's nothing really to say on that. So Kodai Senga had a fantastic season. He'll probably be in the top three, I assume, for rookie of the year. Francisco Alvarez will probably get some down ballot votes, but he did have sort of a slump there in the second half and he didn't start off super hot. So I don't anticipate he'll be in the top of it. Yeah. I mean, there's what else is there to say? It makes sense. And then one that really interests me as someone who loves the Hall of Fame balloting, I don't know why. Of every award that's given out in baseball, this is like, I like the voting on this one the most. Maybe it's like the Oscar fan in me where I'm like, this is like the true, this is like the best picture, you know, where like MVP is like best actor, where it's like, that's cool, but best picture is, and it's a class of its own. And they do the contemporary era committees, like they do those era committees where they have like a smaller group of people get together and vote. And this year, like people who haven't, I mean, it's managers and stuff like that, but it's also like players that I'm sure everyone listening knows how the Hall of Fame voting goes. So this year it's going to be like, I think umpires, executives, and managers. And one of the nominees is Davey Johnson. Former manager of the New York Mets, managed them to the World Series in, 86? I can't believe I just forgot that. I'm trying to type to see who else is on this ballot. Don't think that I don't know what year the Mets won the World Series. That was just it's 11 a.m. and I'm kind of half asleep. Contemporary era committee. I told you I was going to be better at this and then I lied. Oh, God. I went to the Hall of Fame website. I gotta get the... Here we go. The Hall of Fame website's got, like, everything on it. I don't need all that. So the other nominees are Cito Gaston, who managed the... There's, like, no information here. I love this. This is great radio. Cito Gaston, who... managed the Blue Jays, right? Correct. To two World Series. 894 wins I'm seeing here. Davey Johnson, who had 1372 wins and is champ. Jim Leland, who managed the Tigers a few years ago too. Was he that whole time for the Tigers? That's some commitment there. Yeah, I mean, from 2006 to 2013, he managed the Marlins in that 97 World Series. God, that was a hoot, right? Ed Montague was an umpire for 34 seasons. He umpired over 4,300 games. Hank Peters, who was an executive for 42 years, and he managed to a World Series for... I got to... get better at remembering who won all these World Series because I'm seeing years and I'm not remembering what teams they won. The Baltimore Orioles. Lou Piniella. Is it Piniella or Piniella? Piniella? Is he Italian? This is great. You're listening to me typing and trying to pronounce names. Lou Piniella, who managed the... he won two World Series as a player with the Yankees. That's fun. And then he managed the Reds in 90 to a World Series. He was the manager for the Mariners too, right? Yeah. And then, of course, our beloved Joe West and Bill Light, who Joe West, as we all know, is one of the great... Oh, man. Every time I think of Joe West, I think of the, who was it? Rajai Davis sliding into, sliding into him at home in, what was that, 2019? That was hilarious. And then Bill White, who, was he an executive or are they just throwing him in there as a player? Like, it's all executives and then also... Oh, he was the president of the National League for 5 years. You know what? They should bring that back. They should bring back the leagues being their own thing. That was fun. Right? I think so. So yeah, I'm fully on the Davey Johnson into the Hall of Fame discussion. I think, why the hell not? You know, there's worse choices. And that's that on that. The last one I want to get to is Trevor May, beloved Met from 2021 to 2022. He had his ups and downs here, but he was one of baseball's good guys, I would say. You know, like, he's like a good guy to root for. He was just like, you could tell he was a good guy. He liked to stream. He seemed like he was fun. He did like little vlogs. We loved it. He announced his retirement this week. Great career. I would not be surprised if he has a career in broadcasting ahead of him. He's very articulate, very fun. Just a good guy to listen to. And then, of course, we have to celebrate the fact, and I do have this pulled up because I wanted to make sure I have the quote. He ripped into John Fisher, owner of the Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas Athletics, which he played with the A's last season. So he said, quote, "Sell the team, dude. Sell it, man." Before this, I remember he said that he wanted to get the shirt that said "sell the team," but he didn't come in time. Quote, "Let someone who actually, like, takes pride in the things they own something. There's actually people who give a shit about the game. Let them do it. Take mommy and daddy's money somewhere else, dork." It's great. He sounds the way I would talk to John Fisher. If you're going to be a greedy fuck, own it. There's nothing weaker than being afraid of cameras. Do what you're going to do, bro. Whatever, you're a billionaire. They exist. You guys have all this power. You shouldn't have any because you haven't earned any of it. But anyway, whatever. So, we love that for Trevor. And he's right. John Fisher, go fuck yourself, is really like the vibe. I'm glad to see that, like, the players feel this way too, you know? Like, it doesn't surprise me, but, like, that little seal getting broken and being like, oh, the players hate this guy too. It's so stupid. Like, and he's right. If you're going to do all this, do it. But don't be afraid of what you're doing. Like, he's not going out to the cameras. He's letting his little lackeys, his little front office guys take the heat for him. It's John Fisher. Where the hell's he all in all of this? And that's the Met news for this week. I'm so sorry that this segment was terrible. Was a lot of me looking up stuff and not being prepared. I was prepared with that A's thing. We ended on a high. There's like nothing going on other than playoffs, which we'll get to in the next half. But like, let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll be better prepared.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to, has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we're back. So this week, obviously, is also the playoffs. We had some ALCS action and some NLCS action. So in the ALCS, the Rangers went down 3-2 in the series. It looked like, so they won 2 in Houston, which I believe we got to last week. They went up 2-0. Then they lost 3 straight at home, the Rangers, which is awful. And then they won game 6 last night. Now today, I believe, is game 7. So by the time this comes out, this will be dated, but I want it to be known. Flushing is Burning is Team Rangers all the way, okay? We are pro Jacob DeGrom getting a ring on this show. I don't care how it ended with the Mets. That man was here for, like, what, 9 years? 8, 9 years? Give him a ring. his arm is pulled pork in there. Just let him get a ring when he can, right? So we are Team Rangers. We're rooting for the Rangers. Tonight, Max Scherzer's starting, so this could age really badly. Very well could be the Astros in the World Series. We had in Game 5 in Arlington, a little bit of drama. So in Game 5, Adelis Garcia hit a home run to put the Rangers ahead, and he pimped it, as many players nowadays are wont to do. Like, this isn't, I feel like 5 years ago, the whole idea of like pimping a home run was like way different, and like then you'd be like, heavens to Betsy, they actually did it. But like, this is 2023, people are doing this all the time, and like, it put his team ahead in a tied series at home. Of course he's gonna fucking pimp it. Like, that's my thing. Like, of course. Then his next at bat, he gets up. There's a runner on. No outs. Brian Abreu is pitching. Now, Brian Abreu isn't one of these pitchers that has control issues, right? Like, he's good in terms of control, in terms of he doesn't really throw up and into right-handers, which Adelis Garcia is a righty. And he hits him. Clearly intentionally. Like, I don't understand the whole, oh, why would he do it? That's stupid. Yeah, but he did it. Like, this isn't like one of these terrible pitchers with no control we're talking about here. This is a guy who has great control. And the way he reacted, the way Martin Maldonado acted, the way everyone reacted on the field, and the fact that there's six umpires on the field for this game. Every single one of them went, yeah, that was intentional. And people are still like, how dare you say that about Brian Abreu? Like, what? So this situation created a bench clearing brawl. I liked the Fox broadcast actually edited together a video of all the times that Martin Maldonado has pissed off the Rangers this year, which is really funny. Because he'll just stand there at home plate and then like say shit to them as they cross the plate, which is like, come on, man. Like, that's fucking bullshit. But it started a bench clearing brawl. Brian Abreu got suspended for 2 games. He appealed it yesterday, right before the game, so he was able to pitch last night. And then the ruling is going to be today at some point. Adelis Garcia got ejected. Dusty Baker got ejected, which was hilarious because he refused to leave the bench. Which was like, so that was a classic. He's literally sitting there, he's like, what do you want me to, like, you could tell he's like, I'm not leaving. It was so funny. But yeah, it was ridiculous. And then Game 6, Nathan Eovaldi started. Big game, Nate. I've been a Nathan Eovaldi fan for years, and every time he does something where he is a different breed in the playoffs. And I think it's important that we recognize this and we like give this man his flowers for being as good as he is in the playoffs. It's spectacular. I mean, he had a bad end to the season, if I remember correctly. And then like, he just turns around and he's like, yeah, I'm in the playoffs now. And then like turns it on again. So it's spectacular. And then last night, you know, the Astros struck out Adelis Garcia 4 times, and they were like, oh, we keep striking Adelis Garcia out. Their social media kept making posts about it. And then Adelis Garcia hit a grand slam, and the Rangers were up 5-2, but like, that grand slam was the dagger, right? Because there's a world where you can see the Astros coming back from down in the ninth, right? Like, all you need is a couple base runners, and then like, you need Jose Altuve up or Yordan, you've won the game. The 7 runs is all a different story. And he went around the bases, didn't really, you know, do anything. If that was me, if I was Adelis Garcia, I'd be turning cartwheels around the bases. You ever go into, I'm a big MLB The Show player, and there's those animations around the bases where you're like dancing around the bases, and then like you run past second, you're like, oh, I forgot to touch it, and you go back and touch it. Like, that's what I would be doing. I would be acting a fool on the base paths, and then I would stomp both feet. I would jump up like a two-year-old jumping into a puddle, and I would stomp on home plate. Like, he's better than I am, is all I'm saying. So yeah, game seven is tonight. It's tied 3-3. This series, tonight's gonna be intense. I kind of, like, I had to record today so we'd get it out in time, but, like, kind of hate that I'm not recording until after the game, until before, like, before the game happens. So next week we'll know who's in the World Series, and we'll already have World Series games going on, which is crazy to me. Yeah. And then there's also an NLCS going on. The Phillies, they are something else. Bryce Harper, Nick Castellanos, Kyle Schwarber. These guys are crazy. But the Arizona Diamondbacks are refusing to die, which is very interesting to me. And today is game six. So I believe the Phillies are up 3-2, right? They're up 3-2. Yes. They're in Philadelphia tonight. Today, oh, it's at 5. I'm not going to be surprised if the Phillies destroy them tonight because they are in Philadelphia. They want to win this. If they win this tonight, they'll have the same amount of rest as whoever wins this ALCS, so that'll be nice. And I want to comment on something very specific to me, and I feel like to this show as well. They're using Dancing on My Own originally by Robin as their song, right? But they're using a version by some guy named Callum Scott. Now, no hate to Callum Scott. I don't know who he is. That's not my thing. But you know what? You do you, pal. Fantastic. Why? Is there some sort of rights issue that is keeping them from using the original Robin version of this song? The perfect Robin version of this song. This song should be sang by Robin, and that's it. This is my same thing with Fast Car by Tracy Chapman. Why is there another version sung by a man? We don't need that. That is not needed. You know, certain ones I will give you any chance you want to. No, not these. These are ours. And it makes me mad every time I hear them playing it in the stadium or in the celebrations, and they're all singing it, and I'm like, no, no, no. No, 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 no. This should be the Robin version. Because anything, if the Phillies lose the World Series this year, the second year in a row of using this song, it's because they did not use the Robin version. And that is my belief. It's, why are we using a subpar version of this song? It's mind-boggling. And I just, it makes me mad. It makes me, you can hear it. I've been holding on to this for 2 years. Why? Anyway, the Diamondbacks are starting Merrill Kelly tonight. That didn't go great last time. He gave up 3 homers. And he, like, made some sort of comments about, here's the thing. If I'm going into Philadelphia as an opponent, I'm not saying a fucking thing about Philadelphia until we're clear out of that place for good. If I'm Merrill Kelly, I'm not saying a thing until game seven's over, right? And I never have to see Citizens Bank Park for like 6 months. And they'll let me have it early next year, and then they won't, you know, whatever. It's him versus Aaron Nola. Aaron Nola has a 0.96 ERA in 3 postseason starts. This man is going crazy. And he wasn't bad in the regular season, but he wasn't like 2018 out Nola. This postseason is going to get him the bag. He has struck out 19 and 18 and 2/3 innings, and he's only walked 2. That's someone, we'll talk about this probably in a couple weeks, but he's someone that I wouldn't hate the Mets going after in terms of rotation help, you know? He's young-ish. I think he's like 29. I would not hate that at all. I've always kind of liked Aaron Nola. Never had anything against him. He's 30 years old. Yeah. That is my don't be surprised move for the Mets this offseason. But yeah, this is going to be a wild game six. If the Diamondbacks can win game six, I will be genuinely, obviously, if the Phillies win game six, there is no game seven. But, like, if they win game six, I feel like their percentage of winning game seven shoots through the roof because they'll actually have been able to do it in Philly. But I'm predicting the Phillies. I think the Phillies can make it through. Bryce Harper and Nick Castellanos are just going to go crazy in Citizens Bank Park tonight, and that's going to be it. Now, here's the interesting thing that I was listening last night to the broadcast. If the Astros win the ALCS, I believe the Phillies have home field advantage in the post in the World Series. If the Rangers win, then I think the Rangers have home field advantage. Which is interesting. What record? So all three teams ended with a 90-72 record. So it's all coming down to, I think, matchups and stuff like that, which is like, of course, it would come down to three teams with 90-72. This is the, we can't have the wild card anymore. The week-long bye is bad for people. Who gives a shit? All right, I think I did just about as much as I can do. This is going to be a shorter episode than usual. There's just nothing going on other than some general postseason stuff, and even that, like, it's just, like, continuations. So let's take a break. We'll come back. I'll have a movie minute. Hopefully that won't be every movie I've ever seen again.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, and we're back. So I was thinking what the show here is going to be once the season is over. And of course, we'll have off-season stuff with, you know, the Mets and general league stuff. But there's going to be like a period of and awards and stuff like that. But there's going to be stretches of time where it's going to be very boring. So I was trying to think of what we could do that would make this show maybe a little bit more fun. And I was thinking I might want to do some more movie stuff, of course. Maybe do some baseball movie content. Keep it, you know, connected to the show, but also with an eye on what else we could do. Because I'm a Bulls fan, but I can't with them anymore. And the Liberty just lost in the finals. This is a game four. That was terrible. So I'm not going to have a ton of stuff to talk about anyway. And next year's Olympics are summer Olympics. So I don't even have winter Olympics that we could do. So yeah, we might just pivot to some baseball movie content. So I will keep you guys posted. Obviously, we'll talk about it on the show. If there's anything, I'll tweet about it, put it on Instagram, anything like that. Maybe we'll read books. So, you know, we'll figure it out. I will give this a good amount of thought. But the likelihood is that it's going to be more movie content, which I think could be fun. We'll watch, you know, discuss a little bit of a movie together for an act two, you know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Now, talking about movies, as always, we've got the patented Grace Carbone movie minute. Now, this is going to be the last one for October. Right, I did my math wrong. I thought there was going to be another one next week, but given that we usually post these episodes on Wednesdays, next Wednesday is November, which is crazy. I can't believe that. So, next week we're going to get into my next point. But I want to end this month on one of my favorite. I wouldn't say it's a horror film. It's horror, but it's not like horror or anything like that. And you know what? I'm going to actually do two because I did do my math wrong. And I want to shout out both of them because they're both good. So they're both a little bit older. One's from the 80s, one's from the 60s. But both are fantastic. So if you're looking for something that's a little less scary and a little more funny, then, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen this already, but Little Shop of Horrors, the musical film from 1986. So he's like an hour and a half long, if that. And it's so good, so funny. The music is so great. It's kind of the perfect cult film in a way. Like you sit there and you know, I'm sorry, I'm distracted. I Googled this and there's a little plant and I don't know what it wants me to do, but the plant is just flashing. So I will figure that out. On Google, it's the Audrey Till, right? Like the concept of this is crazy. And now it comes from a 1960, I believe, or 61, 1960 film, a Roger Corman film who's psychotic. Like, if you ever get a chance to watch some Roger Corman films, totally recommend, because they're crazy. But this guy, played by the great, as always, Rick Moranis, he's in love with this girl, Audrey, who has this abusive dentist boyfriend, played by Steve Martin. And he is a terrible boss, played by Vincent Gardenia. And he finds this plant, and the plant feeds off human blood, and it's become sentient. It starts to talk. The Audrey Till. This movie has the like one of these great casts where you have John Candy and Christopher Guest and Bill Murray, and it's so funny, and the music is so good. Like, it's one of those movies that I can't believe exists and is as good as it should be. And it's directed by Frank Oz, which he worked with Jim Henson for a while, and then he did some stuff with Star Wars. He was Yoda. He's directed a lot of stuff. And, oh God, excuse me, it's 11 a.m. I don't know why I'm so tired. It's so fun. I saw this in the theater a couple of years ago. And there's a second ending, right? So the original ending is like, the theatrical ending, we'll say, not the original ending. The theatrical ending is this like great triumphant heroes moment, right? And then the original ending that they cut, that they reshot, is psychotic. What's funny is it doesn't give the audience what it would want in like a traditional sense, but it works better than I think the theatrical ending. And it's a miracle that it still exists because they cut it and it was like all that was available was like a black and white version. It was like this work print rough thing. And then Warner was like, okay, we're going to restore this. And they put it out on Blu-ray. And it's the original ending. It's longer, but it's so much better. And I think if you've seen it without the original ending, if you've seen the theatrical ending with the heroes sort of like, of course, triumphant moment, watch it with the original ending. And if you've never seen it at all, watch both. Because it's so quick. Even with the original ending, it's like an hour and 30-something minutes. Like, it flies. So that's my first one. And then what I want to recommend is a film from 1963, directed by Robert Wise. So this is a black and white film. It's called The Haunting. It's an adaptation of Shirley Jackson's novel, The Haunting of Hill House, which they turned into a Netflix series a few years ago. I haven't seen that, but I've seen this. It's got Julie Harris, Claire Bloom, Russ Tamblyn. This movie, for its time, is pretty scary. And it's also kind of It's a little progressive, right? And I just want to make sure that I get this right. But you've got, I want to make sure I get the character's name right here. Where, Julie Harris is so good in this movie. So Claire Bloom plays Theo. And I believe the Wikipedia page is giving me nothing here. So Theo in the book is gay. In the movie, she's maybe bisexual. But here's what I think is important to keep in mind in that idea. It's from 1963. And 1963, keep in mind where we were in history. There was no Stonewall at that time. There was no real gay rights movement. It was, especially in England where this was made, I believe it was still classified as a mental illness. The original film was supposed to go a little bit further into Theo's queerness, and it doesn't, which is understandable at the time. I mean, this is still the Hays Code, everything like that. So when we look at this film, I think it's important. I know there's a way to be like, well, they could have just done it anyway. You really can't at that time, right? And this is film history at this point. I'm going to do this again. I'm so sorry that I'm doing this to my movie minute again. I recommended this a few months ago. So at least this is a callback to something. The documentary, The Celluloid Closet, because it really does go into this stuff. You had to make it into subtext. And this film makes it as close to and partially text as it possibly can without upsetting the censors, right? And this is a British film, so they were allowed to go a little bit further. I mean, there's the 1960 film, Victim, which actually does go into stuff like this, like in a textual way, which is crazy. It goes into homophobia and stuff like that. British and the kitchen sink dramas of the time allowed sort of their film industry to get a little bit wider on what it depicted. But yeah, this film takes it to a point where, like, you're like, wow, I can't believe a film from 1963 actually did that. And then there's all sorts of subtext to read into it with Eleanor's character and Theo's character. And it's such a great film. Like, it's actually really scary. And the guy directed it is Robert Wise, right? And if you've heard of his name, he's directed two Best Picture winners. He did direct them. He's dead now. sorry. He directed West Side Story. He co-directed it with Jerome Robbins, but he really directed it. Jerome Robbins just sort of took the lead on the dance segments of it. And then he directed The Sound of Music. So this guy is talented, and this guy's great. And he made this movie kind of right in the middle of those two, right? Because the West Side Story came out in 61. Sound of Music came out in 65. So he put himself right in the middle there. He did this. This is kind of like a little bit B-movie-ish. Not super B-movie, but a little bit B-movie-ish. And what I think is really fascinating about this is that he spends his entire career doing stuff like this, where he sort of tackles some of these, especially at that time. You know, he had just done Odds Against Tomorrow in 1959, which I might recommend next month. It's a great noir with Sidney Poitier and I believe Richard Widmark. I can't believe I just got all of that wrong. It's Harry Belafonte. The noir I was thinking about with Sidney Poitier was it him and John Cassavetes? I've seen so many noir films. No, it's not him and John Cassavetes. What movie? I have no idea what movie I'm thinking about with Sidney Poitier right now. But it's Harry Belafonte, Robert Ryan, who's essentially, like, there's, like, three big noir actors of that, like, late 50s period for me, and it's, like, him and Richard Widmark and, like, whoever else. But this No Way Out by Joseph Mankiewicz. That's the one I'm thinking about, with Sidney Poitier and Richard Widmark. I was thinking of the entirely wrong movie. I was thinking, in for some reason, the two names flip-flopped in my mind. But Harry Belafonte in it. So he was tackling stuff like, obviously in this he was doing like horror with sexuality mixed in with that story. It was racism, and Sound of Music had the Nazis, and Odds Against Tomorrow was racism, and then you had I Want to Live, which covered fucking everything in that movie. But his work is so fascinating. I think that this one is such an interesting point in his career where he was like doing his thing. It's such a fascinating film to watch in terms of like visuals too. The cinematography is so good. It's got, you know, moving sort of these sequences with the cameras moving, and there's like weird like tracking shots and stuff like that. It's the production design is great. So it's really worth it to sort of seek out this film from 1963, because you kind of can't believe it was made then, right? Because it feels like it was made then, but it also feels like it was, there was this really interesting thing happening in like those 60s, early 60s horror films where it feels of its time, but it also feels ahead of its time. I just went and saw The Birds yesterday, and Hitchcock, you know, I've seen so many Hitchcock films, and he never really trafficked in gore or anything like that. His horror and thrillers were more of the psychological bent. But The Birds had some really gory stuff. I mean, there's those scenes where the guy's eyes are pecked out by birds when all you see are the empty sockets, and you're like, holy cow. You know? So there's this interesting pocket of films where like in the early 60s where it feels of its time and ahead of its time. So I would classify The Haunting in there. It's like an hour and 50 minutes, totally worth your time. It's on Max as well as Little Shop of Horrors, I believe, as well. Little Shop of Horrors I also think is available on free for like on YouTube, like one of their free with ads. So you can find both these films pretty easily. Yeah, that's this has been a very rambling episode, and I apologize for that. But it's also been a shorter episode. So, you know, you take the good with the bad. Thank you so much for listening. You know where to find us online. We're on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, at FIB Pod. We're on Instagram at Flushing is Burning Pod. And we are on, you can email us at flushingisburning@gmail.com. I also encourage you to subscribe to the Patreon. If you go to homerunapplesauce.com, there's a link there that will take you to the Patreon. If you're listening to the show, I assume you listen to the other shows on Home Run Applesauce, A Pod of Their Own, From Complex to Queens, Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. Actually got it right this time. And if you subscribe to the Patreon, you're not only supporting us, you're also giving yourself the opportunity to get more in depth with these shows and these creators. You can join our private Discord server. There's monthly playlists, I believe. I think there's something where there might be some merch at some point. I don't know, but it's like $5 a month, you know, and it's just you're supporting us who work so hard to make that. And as hard as I work on this, I know it's not even close to comparing to what everyone else puts into this. So I would recommend you do that. I have no idea what's going to happen over the next week in terms of the playoffs. Very weird situation we're in right now. We could have the world's weirdest World Series, which I think would be Rangers Diamondbacks. I wouldn't hate it, but yeah, this is gonna be an interesting week. Hopefully next week we have more stuff to talk about other than just the playoffs and like the most minor Mets news that I try to push up into 15 minutes. And yeah, so thank you for listening. Let's go Mets. I mean, they're not playing. Feels weird to say that. I hope everyone in the playoffs has fun.